nicest little piece of static.
Isn't there nothing there?
Yeah.
Me and me. Very poor feeling.
Sometimes it happens.
Yep.
But anyway, Holtzman, he said, you know, why would you give me some information like that? And I said, well, why would you print it when I said you had to? And it turned out we laughed about it. And I started getting questions on people later on, and some of the other ball clubs will come and say, no, what do you mean you're calling? I said, well, you know, I'm really not at liberty to talk about it.
Speaking of Knowles, even yourself, I was in San Diego and saw two of the early season games out there this year. And the trivia question, or whatever it's called, that comes on, flashed on the board out there, had one about you. Who hit a home run in the ninth inning, last playoff game to keep Montreal out of the series? And they had, on a Monday, and they had the Monday in different type print. Well, it was a giveaway. I don't think they ought to give the fans that much head start. Then later it says, next game, you may not know it, but only one pitcher has appeared as a relief pitcher in all seven games of the World Series. Of course, it's Darryl Knowles. Again, they halfway give it away. So I said, Darryl Knowles, and there were some young guys behind me in the stands who knew their baseball. They were sharp, but they were in their 20s. And, oh no, Raleigh Fingers. I said, Raleigh never got into seven games in the World Series. They didn't want to believe it. I'll bet you a beer. I said, okay, if you want to buy a beer for me. So a couple of innings later, they give the score. And in the meantime, the old fellow sitting next to me turned around when I wasn't looking. And said, too much with this guy. He's a baseball writer. They were slowed down. Anyway, 78 was the year you rescued the flag.
76.
I mean 76, yeah.
76. Well, that was the bicentennial year. Turned into be the bicentennial tire sale. I mean, you look and the bicentennial tire sale. And that was early in the season, and that was with Chicago. We were in Los Angeles on a Sunday afternoon. And from time to time, you see guys run out on the field, and you don't know if it's because maybe they've had a little bit too much of the celebrating in the stands and hot afternoon alcohol get them, or if it's, to win a bet, or whatever it is. And saw these two guys come out of the field from left field, and they ran past Jose Cardinal in left field and came into left center, and I saw that one of them had something under his arm, and I couldn't tell what it was. And then they stopped in shallow left center and took out what proved to be an American flag and spread it out almost like it was going to be a picnic blanket or something. And they knelt down alongside of it, and I saw one of them pull something out that was very, very bright, very flashy. It appeared to be a can, and going in action like he's pouring something on it. So I assumed immediately it was not holy water, it was probably lighter fluid or gasoline. I started running at him, and they lit the one match and went down to put it to the flag, and the wind blew it out. And just as they lit the second one and were ready to put it to the flag, I was there, and I just scooped it up and continued on, and guy threw the can of lighter fluid. The first thing that came to mind, because the thing was soaking wet, first thing that came, is it on fire? Well, obviously it was not. So we can look back and see it, fortunately. But Lasorda was coaching third at the time for the Dodgers, and he ran by me, and I went and handed it to Doug Rao, left-handed pitcher of the Dodgers that came out. I just handed it to him, and the umpires went out. Lasorda was calling those guys everything in the world as he went by me. He was putting one of them to swing at him. And at first, it flashed in my mind, maybe, well, I'll just bowl him over, maybe, and stop him. But I got there, and the picture shows, I mean, they were putting the match right
to
it
when
I grabbed it. So timing is very important
in anything.
But they were fined $80 apiece, put on 2-year probation, and I requested through the Dodge organization and out in Campanas. I said, well, if possible, I'd really like to have that flag if I could.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that flag in my home.
I read in the Sporting News just a week or so ago.
Yeah.
You've got it. Yeah,
I have that. I say it's in my home. It's all of our stuff is in storage. We're moving into a new house. We delivered on Friday, so it'll be back in the house on Friday.
Good. Now, after those years with the Cubs in 77, you went over to L.A. Was that another trade?
Yeah, that was a trade. Mike Garman, right-handed pitcher, myself, Buckner, DeJesus, and went back and forth. In fact, the trade was actually screwed up. Bob Kennedy was the general manager who just came in from Chicago. And I was called at my office in Phoenix, in a commercial real estate investment development company.
Mm-hmm.
And I was called in my office, and it was Bob Kennedy telling me that the trade had just been made, and thanks to this and that, what have you. And I had played for Bob in Oakland.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said, Bob, I have a strange feeling that you'll be calling me back very shortly to talk again. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, you might want to check your records. And I hung up. The records were that I was a 10-5 player. I had been in the big leagues for more than 10 years. I'd been with the Chicago Cubs for more than 5. And with a 10-5 player, the rules of Major League Baseball are that I have my approval of a trade. And no one had bothered to ask. So Kennedy finally called me back up and he says, well, you know, we'll send a thing out right away and you can approve it. And I said, wait a minute, I have to abide by the rules. Why don't you? And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, I'm a 10-5 player. You can't just make the deal. I said, the deal's already been announced. And I said, I may have to call some people and tell them that we'll have to have our own press conference. And I said, you know, I'm not the one that makes up the rules, but I have to play by them and I expect you people to play by them. And then I called Campanis up and told him, and then Bob Kennedy called me back again. And basically he told me, he says, well, if you don't approve the trade, we'll make you cut. We'll make you play the 20% cut. And I said, how are you going to make me play the 20% cut? I said, I just hit 32 home runs and knocked in 70-some runs as a leadoff hitter all year long.
Yep.
Because for the 5 years I was in Chicago, I batted in the leadoff position. And he said, well, that's what we'll do. And I said, Bob, that doesn't really sound fair, does it? And he goes, well, that's the way it is. So we finally reached agreement with the Dodgers. But at first, the Dodgers would not negotiate at all, any type of a contract, until I signed the approval of the trade. And I told him, I said, once I sign the approval, you don't really have to negotiate. So I was, in essence, probably as close to being a free agent without actually being one as there was. But we finally got it worked out.
All right. Were you glad to get with the L.A. Dodgers then and with Lasorda?
Well, I was. You have to realize, people ask me, geez, aren't you glad that you got out of Chicago? I thoroughly enjoyed it. I enjoyed the people there. I enjoyed the city. My children were born in that area.
So loyal.
And it was very delightful, and the people were very nice in the time that I was there. But at the same time, I grew up in Los Angeles, and I was going to be back home, and my family lives in that area. So from that standpoint, yes, I was delighted to be there. And it was nice to be back in a familiar area, playing in a ballpark that I grew up just 20 minutes away.
And you came back and right away were on a team that won the NL West.
Well, the Western Division, and then we got into the World Series.
You beat the Phils in 4, you lost to the Yanks in 6.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a minute about some of those teammates you came across when you
I've got. Always, I have always felt that the 1977 ball club with the Dodgers was by far, from top to bottom, the best baseball team I'd ever played with.
got to be one of the best.
I think when you look at the people that were playing Bailey, when you look at the pitching, when you look at the bullpen, when you look at the people coming off of the bench. Mm-hmm. 77 was also a year that we had Boog Powell with the ball club for most of the season. He'd come to the ball club in spring training. I think day in and day out was unquestionably the best team, and I think slightly better than the 1978 team, which again we played the Yankees and, mm-hmm. and lost to them in that year. Mm-hmm. But the 77 team, first day in spring training, I come over and joined the ball club, and we won the first game of spring training in the bottom of the ninth inning with a home run that either Lopes or Smith hit.
Yeah.
And that was kind of an indication of what happens. And with that club, really for most of the year, we felt that if we were within 3 runs, and it got to the seventh inning, game was ours. Because we had that type of a ball club.
Yeah. Yeah, you had everything. There's no question about it. Pitching and good relieving. Not as great as some teams have had in relieving, maybe. But
maybe not from the numbers put together. That's one of those things that numbers are maybe not a true indication in looking back.
I see now Charlie Huff was a reliever that year.
Yeah, Charlie.
22 saves.
Yeah, and a couple of times that Charlie did kind of struggle, which I'm still amazed that a guy that throws a knuckleball can come in relief and be effective because the ball is going all over the place. I mean, what do you do if your ball is missing to the outside once and the inside the next time? The knuckleball, being the animal that it is uncontrollable.
Yeah. Well, Wilbur Wood had much the same fate, but as he was a great reliever before he became a starter, won 20 games three or four seasons in a row. So I guess they can win. I think Phil Niekro and Bart Wilhelm walked an inordinate number of batters, but they will admit they didn't know where the hell the ball was going.
Niekro and I used to have this deal going back and forth. Every time I come to the plate with Niekro pitching, I would yell out to the mound, "Now make sure you don't laugh at me."
That's a good one.
And then I'd hit one, and I'd go past the pitcher's mound or something later on in between innings. He says, "Now make sure you don't laugh at me." That was a bad one, and you hit it.
Yeah, that was a great infield you had too, and it stayed stable for years. Garvey Lopes, Russell, and Say.
Yeah. But it was a settling. Because you came to the ball, you knew who was going to play. There was, injuries obviously present themselves at times.
Mm-hmm.
And but we had a good cross-section of ability at various points where there really wasn't any one area you kind of hoped you didn't have to go to.
Yeah. Not like when Pedro Guerrero says he was playing third base 2 or 3 years ago, and I started asking, "What do you think of when the batter's up there?" And I hope they don't hit it to sacks.
He says, "I think of two things. Second, one, I hope they don't hit it to sacks." He says, "What's the other thing?" "I hope like hell they don't hit it to me."
That's honesty for you, anyway. Well, you got into the World Series anyway in 77 and 78, and the Yankees managed to beat you out. But you stayed with them enough that you were going to have your day finally in the World Series.
Well, I think that's why probably 1981, you had the strike in the first part of the season, and fortunately for us, we realized as a ball club that with the strike there, most of us, lived in that area and stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked out daily at the University of Southern California at Dado Field. And we didn't know how long it was going to last or anything else, but we stayed together really as a ball club. And I think that when it came down to where, we get in that playoff against the Houston Astros, because it was like the first half and the second half winner, and the Astros had won that. We lost the first two of that playoff series. And we came back and we won it. Then we get into Montreal, and we go to Montreal, and we have to win two out of three there to be able to get in. And it comes down to the final game.
And which home run do you remember the best? Your ones you hit.
Well, the one had the immediacy because around the corner and just miles away, the following night, whoever wins that game on Monday is going to play the nemesis that got us 2 years, 77 and 78, the New York Yankees, and they're waiting in New York. And I remember asking Fernando, because the Sunday game was canceled because of bad weather.
Yeah.
There have been light snow flurries and what have you. And I remember asking Fernando, who was going to pitch that final game,
mm-hmm.
I said, have you ever seen snow before?
Mm-hmm.
And I speak just enough Spanish to get slapped or arrested, not necessarily in that order. And I will not starve again.
Yeah.
But I asked him in Spanish, have you ever seen snow? And he says, yes, in the mountains, not playing baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But he pitched. As a matter of fact, I was running third, and he knocked in the first run for us.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a magnificent year, which 81, you know, his first start was because Jerry Royce
was
injured and could not make the first start, so they inserted Fernando so they wouldn't disrupt the rest of the pitching rotation.
Yeah.
But because of the fact that the World Series was going to be the next day, that was probably the most...
Well, the irony of it from Montreal's point of view, I suspect, was that you hit it off of Steve Rogers,
mm-hmm.
who had been carrying them right through the...
Yeah, well, Ray Burr started the game and pitched an outstanding game, and then Rogers came in. Because I remember, you know, we were saying on the bench when we saw Rogers warming up and come in, you know, the game just got more difficult.
Yeah.
And Ron Say started off the ninth inning for us,
mm-hmm.
and he hit a fly ball to left field, and when it left the bat, I thought it was going to be out of the ballpark, and Raines caught it on the front edge of the warning track.
Yeah.
And I remember saying, because I'm the next hitter, and said, well, it's good. No, you forget about hitting the ball out of the ballpark here today. You got to hit it down right down the line and hit it a ton. And Rogers fell behind 3-1. I've only hit one ball out of a ballpark that I actually lost sight of the ball and didn't know where it was, and that was the one. The reason was, is I hit it very well, but I thought I'd hit too high of a trajectory. I didn't think there was any chance that the ball could go out.
Yeah.
And going down to first, I was hoping, well, you know, just missed it. You know, hit it too high. And I saw Dawson continue running back to right center field. I said, well, maybe there's a chance that, you know, he won't get to it, or maybe there's a chance it'll go off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the ball disappeared, I was just hoping I could remember the path around the bases.
Right. That's a great moment. We all deserve a few of those. And then in the series, you teased the Yankees by giving them the first two games. And
that's the only way we knew how to do it at that point.
That was quite a comeback. I was over in the Dominican Republic at that time and saw because Guerrero was in it, they
mm-hmm.
beamed it over there,
yeah.
So I got to see the games over there. He had a great time in that series, especially in the last game.
I remember, I think it was Dick Schaff that came up and asked me, since it was after the second game that we lost. And he says, well, just talking with Reggie Jackson, he was talking about the odds that you people could come back and win, you know, four games and what you have to do and the incredible odds of some mathematician friend of his. And I said, well, you know, with Reggie talking about that, I said, there doesn't seem to be a subject that Reggie is not very well qualified in, whether it's a self-proclamation or not. I said, but Reggie's adding the one commodity that baseball has really missed throughout 100-plus years of its existence. Dick says, what's that? And I said, another math major.
Yeah. Well, you had to beat some pretty good pitchers in Ron Guidry and Tommy John at
mm-hmm.
that point, and you did. Of course, maybe if... who was the manager of the Yankees that year?
Lemon.
If he had handed the ball to somebody other than Frazier a few times, he might have been a little better off.
Well, and that, the thing goes back to, is that the one game in New York, he took Tommy John out of the ballgame and pinch hit Bobby Mercer.
Yeah.
And Mercer hit a long fly ball to me in right field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Frazier at least has the undying honor of being the only pitcher ever to lose three games in the series.
I remember seeing a highlight of the game is that Doug Harvey was a home plate umpire. Doug has this knack for relating the degree with which the ball either caught the plate or just missed the plate. And there's in a World Series highlight film, I guess Bob Lemon was mic'd and he went to the mound. And I had gone like two balls and two strikes or something like that. Frazier threw a pitch that I took for ball three or ball two, one of the two, and he thought it was a strike. And the next pitch, I hit a double, and he had knocked in a run, so Lemon goes to the mound to take Frazier out. And he's telling Lemon, you know what Doug Harvey told me? He says, that 2-2 pitch to Mundy missed by 3/8 of an inch on the outside corner. I thought it was rather humorous, because I've also been the victim of that 3/8 of an inch. It just caught the plate by 3/8 of an inch.
It works both ways. Well, your 82, 3-4 seasons were good ones. In 82, you were second, lost to Atlanta by one. And in 83, you were first, but lost to the Phils in the playoffs. Was that when Carlton was at his best?
No, I think he's probably at his best before that.
Yeah,
probably
was.
We went into Philadelphia. I'm trying to recall who the manager was that came down from the front office for Philadelphia.
Yeah, I know the guy you mean.
Anyway,
the old fellow.
Yeah.
Pretty old. Yeah. Maybe I got it.
Paul Owens?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I think it was Paul Owens. Remember, I came up to the plate. It may have been the final game that we played. I came up to pinch hit, and we were down by, I think, 3 runs, 7-4 or something like that. He came out of the dugout, and I was already at the plate, and I turned around and I said, Paul, what the hell are you going to do? And he says, I'm not letting you hit. And I said, are you going to bring in a left-hander? He goes, that's right. And I said, look, Paul, will you walk a little slower to the mound? My mom's home watching. And he looked at me like I'd just fallen off a turnip truck. And he started laughing. He says, I haven't been able to figure out why you haven't been coming to the plate more often or why you haven't started. And I said, on the way back, I said, oh, Paul, I said, if you really feel that way, that strong, I said, would you mind going over and talking to Tommy? Because so far my talking to him hasn't worked.
Hadn't done anything? Yeah. yeah. Well, anyway, in 83, yeah, Carlton won the first game and the fourth game.
Mm-hmm.
1-0, 7-2.
It was 7-2.
Yeah, yeah. All right. What was your best game?
My best game? Probably in Philadelphia, 72. First time up, I hit a home run to left field. Second time up, I hit a home run to center field. Third time up, I hit a home run to right field.
Doing it all the way around.
And the next time up, I popped up, and I think I got a single my fifth time up.
That was quite
and
great.
I had been put in the fourth position that night by DeRocher. So I was batting a cleanup spot, went 4-for-5, 3 home runs. And the next night, he had me hitting seventh. And I went in and I started laughing. I said, Skip, what the hell does a guy have to do to keep hitting fourth on this ball club?
Ah, boy. What's your best memory out of baseball?
I think all of them, without trying to sound corny. I think because, I still think back to that 8.5-year-old kid that had the sign-up sheet for Little League.
Sure.
One memory that I do have is that it was a youngster Dodgers are playing in the Coliseum. I'm sitting down the left field line, and the Cubs are in town. Ernie Banks hits a line drive that just goes foul. I'm sitting next to that short left field wall, the Chinese wall, that they called it, at Wally Moon, because the Dodgers, Wally Moon was like my guy, because he was a left-handed hitter, and he just stroked the ball off that left field wall. So Ernie Banks hit a line drive, foul ball. It landed like two rows behind me. I turned around, and it came back, and boom, hit me right in the chest, and I got it. So I have a Major League Baseball. It was more valuable than anything at Fort Knox.
Without a doubt. Because you had it in your hand.
I stayed around, and I stayed around after the game was over. And I saw where the buses were going to take. It was a Sunday game. And the buses were going to take the Cubs out of town, and they were going somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
The Dodgers were coming out. And I remember asking, there were two players that came out. I asked one player very politely if he would please sign my ball. You know, sir, will you please sign my ball? And he kind of just kind of pushed me off to the side very gently, but into a chain link fence. Now we go forward. I'm in a Kansas City A's uniform. It's my first year in the big leagues. We're playing against the Detroit Tigers. I get a base hit that knocks a run in, and it looks like it's going to ruin the Detroit Tigers. At the time, I think they're in the running for it. It's late in the year. We're playing in Detroit. I get to first base, and I start yelling and jumping up and down at this certain left-handed pitcher. And he's looking at me like I just landed in a spacecraft from outer space. And I'm yelling at him, that's for not signing my ball when I was a kid. It was Johnny Pondres, and he was the pitcher I got the base hit off of. And I only told Johnny that story a couple of years ago when I finally got the chance to see him. And he says, I'm really glad you told me that story. He says, because I thought you were just some kook.
That's a good one. All right, now, how do you regard baseball today as was the bulk of the time you played? There hasn't been too much time since, but free agency hadn't come into big play until...
No, free agency hadn't come into play. When I first came in, there was only a couple of ways that you could get out of a contract and go with another ball club or be released from a club that you were with. One of them was to die, which was not a real viable avenue.
Yeah, not the advisor.
And the other one was just to have people feel that you could no longer play and get your release. I mean, that was basically it for being involved in the trade. I think the game physically has changed. Speed is much more of an emphasis nowadays. AstroTurf is one reason why. The other thing is, with speed on the ball club, you can force mistakes of another club. I saw little bits and pieces of how much speed can mean being with the Kansas City A's and then the Oakland A's with Bert Campaneris.
Yeah.
And Charlie Finley tried Alan Lewis, the Panamanian Express.
Yeah.
Who couldn't do anything. And he thought a baseball glove or a bat was an endangered species, and he didn't want to harm him. But seeing that particular thing is going, everybody talks about salaries and money and this and that, what have you. Yeah, it has changed. There's no question that it has changed.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't try and spend a lot of time on what could have been and what it is at the present time. The structure is there and it supports it.
Yeah.
So, that's it. That case is closed. But I think the other thing is designated hitter in one league. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
And especially with it in one league only. If in both leagues, you'd be a little less represented.
Yeah, I think the last two or three decades in baseball, in particular, I think you're seeing, certainly now with the cut down roster to only 24 players, I mean, just last week, we saw two non-pitchers pitching in ball games.
Right. Yeah. And every year there are six, eight, or 10 of them who do it.
Yeah.
Total.
And the other thing is the difference, and the reason I'm talking about pitching and ball games, I think the emphasis on relief pitching is without question.
That's one of the latest changes.
20 years, and I think that's responsible in part two. Saying, well, geez, you know, the hitters don't really, you know, there aren't that many really good hitters that are left. One of them is because of that.
Right.
Relief pitching.
Right.
In the American League, you have a tendency to, I think, stay with that starting pitcher much longer.
Yeah.
Therefore, you don't need as many pitchers or relief pitcher. But in the National League, you know, you look at a ball club, you have only one half of your problems taking up the pitching side.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, the emphasis is on pitching.
Sure. Would the Padres ever give any, I sat in the stands out there, when I lived in San Diego, I lived there until 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We moved over here because we've got so many children and grandchildren in the Midwest.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't able to get out there much, so we said, we got to get back to the Midwest. I taught 43 years at Notre Dame.